Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for the recap of Stage 2 of the Giro d'Italia from San Francesco al Campo to Santuario di Europa. A soft mountaintop finish, as in not the hardest stage, but a decent climb to finish where we'll really see where all the GC riders are at. 161 kilometers long, four easy enough climbs through some towns beforehand, about 5Ks, 5.5%, nothing severe. Europa, which is 11.8k, 6.1%. It's a fake news climb. The first 4Ks, 5Ks are false flat uphill just about, and then the last 7Ks are really, you know, 8% average, quite steep, where Pantani has the climbing record from 98, Benji?
Roughly.
The 90s, where he had a mechanical before the start of the climb. Remember that? Pantani's record, he had a mechanical before the start of the climb, and then his team brought him back, and he dropped everybody, including Jalabert.
Yeah, correct.
Any news this morning, Benji?
News this morning, Hiesink was out because of a small fracture in his hand. So that's one Pismo rider out of the race. But outside of that, I can't vividly remember too much when it comes to news before the race. So we're going into this race. Oh, well, learning from yesterday, we're going into this race. Because yesterday we saw UAE that Pogacar was dominant compared to other GC riders. But his team showed some weakness with Groschartner and Novak dropping off earlier than expected during the pull of Bjerg. So would they change the order of their train? Would other teams try and exploit this by putting pressure on that team strength, which has shown to be a real vulnerability? So the breakaway formation phase was the first phase where I was looking at, can they control a breakaway? Will other teams try and use this moment to put pressure on UAE? Because I tried. Yes, there's not that ideal climate at the start of the stage, but even regardless, it is hard to control if you're relatively limited in the sense that UAE has shown to be yesterday. So we see break formation. We see attacks in there. We see, first of all, we see a pro-team breakaway with a few Cofidis riders, which might as
I
well
couldn't
be.
I believe it. Well, because it looked like it was going straight away. It was the Cofidis, Bardiani, Polti, Arkea break with an Astana. And I was like, hold on. I picked the breakaway to win yesterday. I'm like, Did everybody not watch the same race yesterday? Did Little Trek, Visma, Trek, I already said Trek, Quickstep.
Ineos.
They must have watched a different race to what I watched yesterday.
But then?
No, but EF jumped. They were blocked in. They were trying to jump.
Exactly. So then EF jumps, and that triggers a low-key reaction because while EF is jumping, UAE chooses to react to that EF jumper towards, I don't know which rider of EF it was that was attacking at that moment, which that triggers everybody to follow again. I wonder if UAE didn't react to the EF rider.
He should have let him go.
I think that breakaway goes with that one EF rider, and that's up the road. Yep. So I think UAE extended the breakaway formation, made it a little harder for themselves than it would have been otherwise, because then a bit later, some more attacks follow, and at a certain point, we see an Ineos rider move in. And at first, I was thinking, oh, there is hope. There is hope. Ineos is trying to get in the breakaway, doing some kind of maneuver to pressure UAE, who is a bit worse at breakaway formation than you'd hope them to be in this race. And Ganna is in that group, doesn't really pace. So he's at the back of the group. And then I'm starting to worry.
He was there by accident, I think.
I think he was marking that move, but went too hard and the UAE riders couldn't follow his wheel. Yep. So he basically bridged it that way. So he then had two UAE riders already spending their energy trying to catch a less easy to control breakaway with Ganna in it and so forth. So that's the kind of scenario you want to force UAE to be in at the start of the stage. You want them to burn riders. You want them to burn riders now so that they have less riders to do shit with on the final climb of today's stage. So that's part one right there. But were you surprised that when that Ganna group gets caught, we then see a breakaway go up the road with Scaroni, Piccolo, Davide Baez, Fiorelli, and Marcellusi, two Bardiani riders, five riders in total, with none of the teams we just mentioned putting pressure on UAE here?
Yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Like, the fact that Ineos decided to help UAE control brake formation so it would be a soft breakaway, so therefore easy to control today to make the stage even easier, is just unbelievable. Like, let's think about what this stage finish is. Let me explain this stage finish. It's an easy stage. It's 160Ks with 90Ks of flat. There's five warm-up climbs where there's not that much fatigue. There's less than 2,500 meters total climbing.
25,000?
Yeah, that would be... Okay, then maybe you get Jonas in. But there's less than 2,500 meters total climbing. The final climb is a 17-minute effort, which levels off at the end, where a 65-kilo-plus rider who's solo, like Dumoulin, has a huge advantage. And there's an attack point with 4.5Ks to go that's 10.6% average. This climb and stage is the best possible stage you could design for Pogacar. Not that much fatigue, low altitude, between 10 and 20 minute climb, and it's between 6 and 8% average gradient.
To the point that on this specific climb, I don't see Vingegaard dropping Pogacar.
Never.
To the point that it might actually be the other way around.
Not peak Pogacar.
No. Like, Monde is 2 minutes shorter than this. 3 minutes shorter, maybe, depending on your climbing time.
Yeah. Oh, but Vingegaard was doing it easy there, but...
Yeah, but they were... Yeah, they couldn't drop each other.
No. Vingegaard doesn't drop peak Pogacar on this climb. No way. This is really Poggy's terrain. And, the fact that Ineos made it easier then for UAE to control the breakaway, problem number one, and blocking it up...
Mm-hmm.
Just unbelievable, because you're basically saying, I mean, team spend, Benji, how many thousands of...
10,000.
Hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of euros to go 10 seconds quicker in a TT to get custom extensions, to go to the wind tunnel, book the wind tunnel, get the specialist in, pay the specialist salary, do the consulting, get the guy, fly him in, go to the Silverstone wind tunnel, wherever, do the testing in the off season to get 8 seconds. And then you get to a road stage and you say... Poggy, would you like some ponies? Would you like 10? Would you like 10 6-3 seconds? It's unbelievable the difference in logic.
And that's only step one of today's stage. Yeah. Like, I also must say, I was expecting Visma to also go in the breakaway. I was expecting these other teams like Trek to also go in the breakaway, not just because of GC reasons, but also the possibility that Trek could get a stage win if this is a large breakaway, stuff like that. So you're looking at those opportunities. And
well, can I say, on that point, If a team comes to you or before the race and they're in the pre-race interviews and Ineos say, we got the jersey. G said before the race, we've got the jersey, so we have the responsibility to control the breakaway formation to some degree, which is a fugazi. It's a fairy dust, to quote Matthew McConaughey. Yeah. The jersey's an illusion.
Yeah.
It's on Johnny's. Happy for Johnny. Great win yesterday. Great tactics yesterday. Free Johnny. Happy for him. But I'm sorry, Johnny, you're never keeping it. So it doesn't matter. Pog is the odds, more than odds on 10 to 1 favorite for this race.
And the second phase, what is that?
So when Ineos say that, and Visma, Trek, Quickstep all say, okay, no worries, we won't jump today. No! You can say, okay, we're still going to jump and we'll see. Try control us. Yeah. No one forced the issue. And then maybe if you force the issue, maybe if people see yellow jerseys jumping, Quickstep jumping, maybe then...
Suddenly Foss thinks, ooh.
Yeah, and Foss is in a nice group and Ineos is like, you know what? We've got Foss in a group with Tratnik and Jan Hirt. Why? It's UAE's problem. Sorry, I cut you off.
That was phase one. Ineos helping with the breakaway formation with UAE there. Work that they would not have to do, should not have to do, but also work that they should be trying to actually sabotage. They should be trying to jump in groups. And we said yesterday, for example, the kind of things you want to do is... you've got a Swift or a Ganna, you try to combine them with a Foss and try to get those in a breakaway. Imagine Ganna just pacing an entire steam train against UAE. They are burning riders the entire stage.
Rui Oliveira ain't controlling that breakaway.
Milano.
Not in a million
Langen,
years. No way.
They're going to be burned throughout in this stage if you do that. You're going to come to the final climb with less riders, less resources when it comes to UAE, less resources to the point that that will make it easier for Thomas versus Pogacar and easier for Narvaez if that's your goal. If Narvaez pink is your goal, which I don't believe at all going into this stage, then that is another factor. But that's not where it stops. Because then we see Connor Swift going to the front of the peloton and starting to pace instead of UAE riders doing so.
I'm going to need to recover here, Benji, because I'm on a heater. I was here. If you watched the watch along today, I was on a heater. And that's because I want us to have an exciting race, and I always believe that nobody's unbeatable. But speaking of recovery, the episode partner for today's episode of Stage 2 of the Giro d'Europa is Pillar Performance. If you haven't checked out Pillar Performance, they're a sports micronutrition company which sits separate to general hydration and carbohydrate products. They take you to the finish line. Pillar's mission is to get athletes to the start line in the best condition over and over again. And I've been taking Pillar's triple magnesium product, which has been unbelievable for my sleep and recovery, particularly my muscular fatigue. And my legs get really, really sore. I take it 30 minutes before bed each night. I also take a tablet in the morning when I start my day. And I've been feeling a lot better. My Garmin body battery, which I've tracked since I started taking the product, had good results. Now, maybe because it got cooler, but I also think definitely that's the biggest thing I've noticed is my legs are just not as sore, which often, like aerobically, when I've been doing the training plan with Join, like aerobically, I've been always fine. Maybe on the third day of the third day block, the 3 day blocks. But then if my legs are just, I just can't push over threshold that easily when my legs are blocked or sore. But since with Pillar, I've been recovering really, really well. If you would like to check out or try Pillar's products today, it's not just triple magnesium. There's also fish oil, vitamin B. Head to pillarperformance.shop, pillarperformance.shop, or for North American listeners, head to thefeed.com/pillar and enter code ROUGE. That's all caps ROUGE for 15% off. That's ROUGE for 15% off all first-time purchases. Problem two for Ineos Benji.
Connor Swift at the front of the peloton, helping UAE. Not only helping UAE, wasn't pacing at all at that point.
They were laughing.
Ineos was doing the work for Ineos for the first half of this race with Connor Swift. And then you're thinking, why are they doing? There's multiple scenarios that I'm like trying to think throughout, and there's none that makes sense. Because I think their aim, because what they said before the stage was, we need to take our priorities, our responsibilities when it comes to Narvaez and so forth. So we got to control breakaways, stuff like that. I'm guessing that they were trying to defend the Maglia Rosa here by controlling the gap to the breakaway on a stage where Narvaez was 100% going to lose the jersey. So that's a waste, complete waste of Connor Swift's work today. In addition to that, you're also once again helping UAE and helping them save resources in the same way that, for example, when Philipsen wins 4 sprints in a row at the Tour de France, we sometimes see a random team of, like, I don't know, Kokar with Cofidis probably don't do it, but that's the example I'm going with right now. Cofidis go to the front, start pacing, and help whatever the domestique what's the guy, the Jason Osborne at the front of the peloton.
And then they get to keep the whole lead out fresh.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you're trying to prevent. You're trying to make sure UAE loses riders before the final climb, and that's what Ineos is doing the opposite for. And by doing this, they're basically self-sabotaging themselves. And I'm of the opinion that they missed an opportunity at the start of the stage, because UAE, when it comes to breakaway formation, it's always an option to try and put the heat on them.
Yeah.
But also, in addition to that, you're basically self-sabotaging yourself throughout the entirety of the first 70% of the stage.
The way Ineos rode today's stage is the worst possible thing you could do for G if you want him to lose the minimum time to Poggi. You basically don't make it a hard stage. You don't burn, his riders don't have to do any work before Europa. And then you keep the bonus seconds in play. It makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
Unless you think G's going to drop Poggi on Europa, which based on yesterday is impossible. Yeah. And then, so as you say, is to keep Narvaez in pink. I mean, I don't understand.
And the bonus seconds.
Yeah, it's mind blowing. Because listen, if you make Novak, Oliveira and Bjerg pace the hill zone.
Yep.
And then it's only Groschartner and Micah to do. So then Groschartner has to do the lead out into Europa. And then you have Micah from the base of Europa. Poggi will take less time.
Yep.
He will have to either attack from further, or Micah's lead out won't be as hard, so he won't get such severe separation when he attacks. And we'll get to the later stage, but it's the worst way you could approach it for G.
And then I'm trying to think about other scenarios. Does it make sense from a scenario of Pogacar wins this race, we're just riding for second? They said the opposite before the race, but does it make sense from that perspective?
Yeah, if you think G's like the second best, yeah.
Do you think G's the second best going into this? He's one.
With the TTs and where he finished? Yeah.
So,
but that's not what they said.
Yeah.
They said they can win.
Yeah, they said they'll ride out of the box, unusual for Ineos, stuff like that, aggressive, etc. To then do the exact opposite today, which yesterday They were perfect.
Yesterday was fantastic.
We cannot repeat enough. Yesterday, Ineos was perfect. Today, they were the exact opposite to the point that this... Like, how would you rank this when it comes to worst tactics we've covered on this podcast?
Oh, I don't want to... You know I get hyperbolic, but...
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it was really bad. Yeah, to think... Yeah, it was really bad.
we're trying to like make it better, but
no, it's like someone who's never watched cycling the last 2 years was controlling what they were doing.
Yeah,
it's like you thought Tadej Pogačar's name was Tilen, and his brother had replaced him for the day.
Tilen his brother? I didn't know.
Tilen Pogačar
is he good?
No, it's like so
he's collateral, dude.
Well, it's like they thought he was in the race, but he wasn't. Anyway, that's enough on that. We get further into the stage. We get into the hill zone. There's some up and down hills going through towns and some further crashes. A crash with Eddie Dunbar goes down again. He's fractured his hand a fair few times. And he also goes down at the same time with Olav Koy. He was at the back of the peloton into a narrowing, into a roundabout. Koy was there on his own, goes down. Doesn't look like it's too hard, but all of a sudden there's like his shorts are ripped. And that's another, Visma's top five rider. They've had Van Aert. Vingegaard, now second day of the Giro.
Actually.
Koy crashes before the first sprint tomorrow.
How much of that is something that could have been prevented? Hesing crashed yesterday. Valter crashed today together with Koy. Is it positioning?
I mean, Hesing, no. Like, Hesing, it was after Maddalena. He was where he could be. He couldn't be in a better position after Maddalena, and he gets taken out, fractures his hand. Koy and Valter crash in the same position in the last 10 riders. With no other Vismas around them. And so you can say it's bad luck, but you can also say they weren't in the best position. That's where both crashes occurred. And also when Valter crashes later in the race, Tratnik and Oosterbrooks and Tim van Dijk, they're at the front of the peloton.
Yep.
And they're there for a reason. So I don't know if Valter had a mechanical was coming back, but no, I don't always believe crashes are just bad luck. Maybe they are, but not always.
Now, we're going to continue into the last 50 kilometers, but let's recap. From 100, roughly, kilometers to go, Oliveira starts pacing with Ineos. With 75 kilometers to go, Lengen joins that circle as well. So by then, it really looks like UAE is really going to try and take over. At a certain point, Novak's in third position as well. So a three-man train from UAE at the front. Oliveira drops with 56k to go on like the hill zone, so relatively early, but he was also the first one to start pacing. But I did expect him to last a little bit longer personally. And... then we go into the last 28 kilometers, we get into our watch-along moment, and we see Ineos again pacing on the uphill, and at that point we're like, you can help with a break formation, you can help at a certain point, but UAE has already taken over by this point. They're willing to start riding with you, there's no real value to that. In the descents, perfectly fine. I'm okay with Ineos saying, we're going to go to the front in the descents, we got to keep Thomas safe.
But you can lose time to the breakaway on descents.
Yeah.
You can go slower than them on the descents and keep position.
Yep. Again, I was going a bit faster, but that's nitpicking.
What was happening in the breakaway at this moment? Piccolo had fuga de la fuga.
Yep,
and
exactly.
On clear, Piccolo looked quite good. He was also the shortest in GC. He was on 107.
You might have noticed that we skipped completely the intermediate sprints in this podcast, but no, I don't fucking understand how they work.
They don't exist.
They don't exist anymore. When it comes to Ciclamina, we'll talk about the sprints, though. Groves won one, I think, and Ewan won another, which was... it was the perfect Ewan
but
sprint.
Whoever wins the sprint tomorrow at the end is going to be in Ciclamina, so it is irrelevant, really. Like, and the Intergiro, I'm not smart enough to understand.
And
it.
While we do see Groves going for these Ciclamino intermediates, it's what he should do if he wants to compete for it.
It's his advantage on the other pure sprinters.
But the problem is that Ciclamino in the Giro is most likely going to be won by one of the sprinters that wins quite a bit of flat sprints.
You have to be up there top three in the flat sprints.
He would need there to be a variety in whoever wins. But then I don't see Groves winning anyway.
You need Milan to really be very inconsistent.
Yeah.
He's got a good lead out here. He's improved Milan.
And
I don't
is
see
it worth it for 2 points every intermediate sprint?
I mean, what else they got on?
Well, it's 50 in a flat sprint, so...
Yeah, but, I mean...
what else they got on? Gonchi, dude. He rode pretty well at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with it. It's his advantage on the other sprints is... I mean, ideally, if he gets in the breakaway, it's too much to do. Anyway, Piccolo anticipates... there's a break where Maricelli and Scaroni, they're getting caught by the peloton, and we're going into the penultimate climb. Ineos spring start descending into the base of Europa, and then all of a sudden, we see a white jersey. There's many white jerseys in the peloton, but this one is Slovenian champion Tadej Pogačar coming back, and he's got no teammates around him. he's clearly got a full front flat.
Yeah.
Because like you can see, if you can see it without even zooming, full front flat tire. He goes around the corner. He's not going that quick. He's not. I wouldn't say he was taking too many risks. Turns the bike a little bit on, and there's a speed bump through the corner, and the tire rolls off. It rolls off his rim enough, like halfway to the on the rim, and sealant just explodes out, loses it.
I'm fairly comfortable in saying that Envy have Oakless and that he might have been on that.
Okay. Luke says yes, that Envy have Oakless, and that UAE might have been using them or were using them, if which case Peak Talk needs to be analyzing this pronto. But like, no, but seriously, all jokes aside, like, he wasn't, to me, he didn't look like he was taking too many risks, and he just fully, it is rolled off the rim.
Yeah, and reality is also, he didn't look very comfortable after it. Of course, he's angry because of the crash. He's annoyed. Yeah. But I was shocked that there were no teammates waiting for him. It took quite a bit for those teammates that did wait for him to be there. Maybe he communicated it a bit later, stuff like that. Yeah. Maybe it's communication stuff, but I kind of expected him to just stand there and wait for him instead of...
No, when Poggy says... You're all around him, right? You're doing the lead up to Europa. When Poggy says...
But then again, he's sometimes not in a strain.
No, he would have been. I mean, it's not like he would have been there.
Today he would have been.
If he says, I got a mechanical, you need to see three jerseys just boom, straight back. You get him. And the crazy thing watching, I was like, I couldn't believe it. He crashes as a mech. He does get up, so he looked fine.
Yeah.
But he's just pissed, like, oh, what the hell? Bro,
you said it at the start, eh? He's doing a spontaneous impression.
I mean, I don't know if it was by design. I don't think so, but... Pantani had the mech before Europa, came back, dropped everybody with the team leading him out.
He had no team back then, Pantani.
I think they brought him back a little bit. I can't remember.
I think it was pretty
mainly
solo.
Mainly himself, yeah. But Ineos, I'm like, are Ineos going to start pacing super hard? Ineos don't realize for quite a while that Poggi's not there.
Exactly. And someone in the chat says that in his interview, he mentions hitting a pothole and his wheel broke as well.
Okay, so he hit a pothole. Okay, so maybe that deformed the rim.
Yeah. Anyway, he doesn't look injured, so that's good. Yeah. Ineos hasn't realized, Thomas says in his post-race interview, that he only heard about it when Pogacar was back, which they were pacing already, so they would have had, they would have been allowed to keep pacing, which they did, which is fine.
The climb started.
Yeah, climb started. We just see him come back before the things that matter, because like you said, this starts with a pretty gradual first five-ish kilometers, 2 to 5%. Then we get the steeper segments, and the final kilometer is 6% again. But the steeper segments are between 8 and 9?
There's a 10.5% kilometer between 5 and 4Ks to go. It's real. It's really...
So that's where he would go on paper.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I said it on the stream. I was like, he's going to get my... And this is the thing. He's brought back no problem. He's got four guys. He's got Groschartner, Bjerg, Novak, Mika, all as fresh as they could possibly be. He's got them all, and this is not a long climb. They have to get him from 9Ks to go to 4.5Ks to go with four guys. That's very doable.
Yeah.
And then Micah can do the super hard lead out Liège style on Redoute. Not, I don't know if he did it, but you know what I mean? Like, Micah can do the 3 minutes really hard. If Bjerg, Novak, and Groschartner had to work earlier, and Micah has to go from the bottom, and this is an irregular climb. Yeah. There's some sections where it's basically flat.
1% in the middle.
Where Groschartner was pacing. If Micah has to do that, then his lead-out won't be as strong.
Yeah.
Poggi won't be launched at a higher speed, and maybe Poggi has to go from further. It all goes back to the breakaway formation.
Yeah, but at this very moment, we see Pogacar being back, coming to the front. His team gets on the front, says thank you to Ineos for doing all the work in the stage, and they get to work. And they get to work in an order that is different from yesterday, but I still think that it should have been slightly different.
Agree.
As in, we saw, I don't know, remember the order. Groschartner first, then we saw Bjerg, and then Novak, who was at first a bit at the back, but eventually he ended up sitting behind Bjerg.
But Novak, then, I think, he was a bit tired from bringing Poggi back initially.
Fair. And then Pogacar was behind Micah at the back.
Yep.
So we're looking at that train right now. Novak yesterday had a pretty bad day, let's say, because he dropped during Bjerg's pace. And in this occasion, Groschartner was doing the early pacing. We still see some damage in the peloton, some early droppers. In the meanwhile, Tiberi apparently had a puncture and is gone for the rest of the day. So where he finished,
back.
I don't know yet. I'll have to check once we wrap up this stage. I think Pozzo Vivo crashed before the Tour's climb started. He eventually comes back to the back of the peloton. But when Groschartner is done pacing, we start with Bjerg. And that's where I start seeing in corners, Bjerg gapping Novak a little.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I think it's Bjerg's fault. Didn't Novak try to come in front of him and Bjerg didn't let him?
He was definitely half-wheeling him at a certain point.
Yeah. But you think Novak should have gone before Bjerg?
Yeah.
I agree. If anyone wants to see a very strange result with someone you wouldn't expect to be there, go and look at Tirreno Adriatico. Gabriel reminded me. Tirreno Adriatico stage 5. Go and look who came 14th. The riders ahead of him, Wout Poels, Kemna. The riders behind him, Ivan Sosa, Max Poel. That's the stage Vingegaard won solo.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
That rider was Mikael Bjerg.
Yeah.
Like, Novak doesn't climb like that on the special. That was a 12K 6% climb. And so I agree with Benji. Novak should have been first, especially after yesterday. But in the end, it doesn't matter. Novak isn't able to pull. And Bjerg drops him. And then it's Micah. But now, Benji, Micah's going. He hasn't had to do anything all day.
Yep.
Micah's going from 5.5Ks. And I told you where that steep kilometer is. And Micah does. He does it so smart. UAE do it. Micah really is. He's so experienced in pacing for Poggi now. He goes on the steep bit, full launch, strings it out, flattens off, almost starts freewheeling.
And the shocking thing to me is also, he kind of needed Novak to set the pace on the 1% segment before he launched. They were missing something there to the point that Micah had to slow down a little before that move happened. But continue on your story. He's doing his lead out.
And then it kicks up again. The crowd narrows. And then it also, when you do it like he does, and it's slow, 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 bunches up. And then you immediately just whack it, the elastic effect. If you go and watch Otterbrook's position when Micah begins his final like 250 meters, because that elastic effect is like just snaps that and the guys who don't explode. O'Connor's right there on Poggi's wheel, but yeah, it puts it in a line. Incredible work by Micah once again. He's just so good. And we know what's happening. Poggi goes. He goes like we expect. It's not to drop you straight away.
Like Laredoutz.
Yeah, exactly. Where Carapaz is there, but he's thinking, I've got 4.5Ks to go, and I'm holding this at threshold after. He goes, O'Connor's in the wheel. I love it and I don't love it. We've seen this enough times from Ben that he overextends and then really costs himself.
Yeah.
And he did it in Tirreno Adriatico behind Vingegaard.
It's ciclismo, but it costs him eventually because then while he tries to follow, Thomas is being gapped the little of the wheel of O'Connor. So he's being gapped now. So the two riders ride off, Pogacar and O'Connor. Break called, by the way. Let's not talk about the break Piccolo's in the Shadow Realm. Anyway, those riders up the road. And then O'Connor just gets gapped as well because he can't keep that effort up for as long as Pogacar is doing at those watts. And that's why Pogacar gets the gap. But also O'Connor, it's weird to say because I like the ciclismo of him doing this.
Yeah, he's trying to win the race.
For the sake of my Velo Games team, where I do want O'Connor to podium this race, I'm sorry, my friend, but you shouldn't do this. You're like Skelmose said he did at LBL, which I didn't really see. He flew too close to the sun.
Yeah, I mean, following Poggi is a risk, with Carapaz also. So, and this is what happened on the San Giacomo climb or Petrano climb, where he paced with Hindley in the wheel behind Vingegaard for a long time.
Yeah.
Hindley drops him. And that's what happens. And I would like to see one time he races a bit negative, like some other guys maybe did. And G sitting in the wheel, G can't pull. G says he has to recover. Poggi takes 15 seconds on them. The gap wasn't exploding.
Yeah.
I think Poggi, he was going fine. And then the group of a big enough group with, I'll go through the riders.
El Patron? Or?
El Patron, a little bit behind. A group with Fortunato, Lipovic, Stora, who I think we saw Tudor
Kian
pacing
first
back.
Credits to Kian. He was the first to bridge.
Kian bridging across. Aina Rubio, Jan Hirt was around there. Chavez, but they eventually lost
Rubio,
a bit of time.
Man. Sorry, but I didn't expect it. You did, kind of?
I didn't expect it, but I also
it makes sense afterwards.
Yeah, on an easy stage. they come back to Thomas and O'Connor. And we see, this is where it was really unbelievable, Benji. And Thomas said this in his post-race interview. He said that group came back.
Yeah.
He thought, I'll recover and I'll go for the bonus seconds. He didn't say, I'm going to help them chase Pogacar. And so Lipovits and Oterbrooks are the two white jersey guys, and that's going to be a great competition.
Yeah.
They start pacing Pogacar back, and Lipovits gains time on Poggi in the last 2.5 kilometers.
Yeah.
And Poggi, I don't know, he apparently didn't have a head unit, so he can't look at how long is left on the climb. He can't look at maybe his power data, but these guys are pretty good at riding off feel. Poggi, to me, it's funny to say, I don't think Poggi looked that good.
It's weird, eh? Because he crashed before the climb.
Yeah.
So that's an effect. But the last 1.5 kilometers, he didn't look as... It's weird. Sometimes at like the one-week stage race, he wins. We're looking at a scenario where he goes, gets a gap, and I'm thinking, okay, this man, he's got a gap, and he still looks relatively comfortable. But there are stages where... In today's example, for example, in the last 1.5 kilometers, he didn't look as comfortable as in those stages in those one-week races, which he crashed before the climb. I will attribute it towards that for now, because it's impossible to say on it. Because let's be honest, he took time on everybody. So we can't say he had a shit performance. He dominated GC here today. He took the gap we expected him to take on today's day. You said 30 seconds roughly.
Yep.
He took 27 wins the stage.
Oh, he did what he needed to do.
But there's a slight thing in me where he was suffering a little more than I expected.
Yeah, I don't think Poggi looked that good. I'm going to say it. I know he wins. But that's why Poggi at 90% still wins this stage.
Yeah.
Like, that's why you never...
And
he's too good on these sort of stages.
Realistically, you also don't want him to be at 100% if you want to win the Tour de France after the Giro.
I think that's not correct.
No?
I've heard a lot of that talk, and it's kind of like, I don't know where the science backs that up or whatever.
In my head, it feels logical, but I also don't know whether science backs that up.
Yeah, but then you also hear he's been in Sierra Nevada training the house down to come to this race in top shape. So it's like, which is it?
I don't know.
But I mean, still, the reason I say that, and he didn't...
Well, what is he going to say? I went to Sierra Nevada and didn't train.
No, it was other people. I listened to the interview with Joran Swart, the head of performance in the cycling podcast, and Micah. But he was just looking back a lot. And I think Pog felt he wasn't... I thought he was worried he was going to get caught or something, Benji. Because
I don't know.
Why is he... In Catalunya, he attacks. Fucking the guy's in his own world.
Yeah.
He's not looking back. He's not looking back 10 times.
Yeah.
So... And that's why. Listen, if he goes attacks today, Benji, puts 45, 50 seconds into them, breaks the record on Europa, I mean, what's the point in us having that Ineos discussion? It's irrelevant. And maybe it still is. But I really think that made a difference today, that if Micah has to go from the bottom, can't do the hard lead out, there is a chance, first of all, G doesn't lose all the bonies. Secondly, that the gap is not 27, it's 12 to 14.
And by controlling the stage with Ineos, you also give those bonies away, which, like, to Pogacar, otherwise they have to control and if then see whether the break is hard enough. Like, the whole scenario went into it yesterday. But we get to the finish. Pogacar wins. But for a second, we have that group sprint behind, because that group never really separates.
No.
We have a sprint on cobbles. And there we see Daniel Felipe Martinez, who had a mechanical at the start of the climb, apparently.
Boradias
said it. He put it on himself and continued.
Damn.
And... finished second on this climb. That is a wonderful performance.
I mean, two Bora guys in that group of four just behind. Martinez finishes second. Thomas sprints after not pulling with the group at all that I could see to get this four bonus seconds. Fortunato fourth. Lipovits fifth. Stora sixth. Then there's a gap, another 3 seconds there on 30 seconds. Stora, Oterbrooks, Rubio. Then another gap of 5 seconds to Juanpe. Then a gap of 37 seconds to Jan Hirt. Then Chavez, Lutsenko, O'Connor all blew up. They're on 1 minute. And other GC guys, Plapp and Bardet lost 1:20. Caruso lost 1:29. Arensman maybe better today, 1:36. Sheffield better today, 1:51, I guess. Narvaez on 2 minutes and three, so not quite the 6 seconds he needed.
Yeah.
GC.
But
sorry, Gip.
I do want to say, 14th, Alex Baudin on 118, the white jersey.
Really good.
That is a really good performance. Yesterday, he got fourth by being in that seven-man group up the road that eventually got caught, but then he still was able to sustain a gap on other GC riders that dropped on the climb. This man is 22 on the Cafélage des Arts there, out of contract, and I'm extremely curious who's going to try and sign him.
Baudamadol.
This is one of those riders that, because of all the other riders that are available, might be slightly under the radar to the point that a team that you might not expect it might be able to catch him.
Right, but he got the Tramadol thing, right?
He did get a Tramadol thing last year.
From the Giro last year. It was like on a downhill sprint stage. Very strange.
It would help him go faster?
I mean, he says he didn't use it.
A lot of people said that in their lives.
But it stuck, like it didn't get overturned. But maybe that will be a little bit more difficult for to get a big offer from maybe another French team. On results alone, 10th in Basque Country, by the way, in GC.
We're saying that, but his team is also an MPCC, so the Decathlon.
Yeah, I mean,
and they reactivated him, so
yeah.
Got 10th in Basque Country.
It's not an anti-doping rule violation, so yeah. that's the rule.
Well, now it is, eh?
Now it is, I believe. But yeah, on his results alone, Étoile de Bessèges 7th, Basque Country 10th. Behind Ayuso, like he's clearly improving a lot and a good rider. So takeaways, GC, Pogacar goes into the pink jersey maybe a day later than he hoped, 45 seconds out of Thomas and Danny Martinez. Otterbrooks in fourth on 54 seconds. Ina Rubio in fifth on 54. Fortunato 105, Juanpe 109, Jan Hirt 111, Chavez 124 with O'Connor, Lutsenko and Storas on 131. Points jerseys, Fiorelli keeps it, KOM Poggi takes it, and Dani Felipe will wear it, and Otterbrooks goes into the white jersey, which I think he'll be quite happy about, and Bora leading the team's classification.
Yep. After Lipovic was much stronger than yesterday.
Yeah, he was good.
TT is still going to hurt him in a similar way than Otterbrooks, I think.
Lipovic was the strongest of that group in the final 3Ks.
Yep, for sure. So it's curious whether he can prevent that from yesterday happening again. Because, I don't know, Arendsman probably fell through again, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, Arendsman lost 130.
Yeah, so he's now 407 in GC. That makes it much harder to have like a secondary option in GC. With Lipovic Martinez, that's the kind of thing you can have. You can go to a Prato di Tivo state. They're probably not going to do it because they're probably going to think we can try and keep these riders up there.
Bora and Gasparotto. Yeah. I mean, Hindley was the guy that got in the break last year.
True. Torino stage.
Yeah, they got a bit of cojones.
So, like,
Otterbrooks is not that guy to get in the break.
Nah, and also they don't have a second option in GC. Valtteri ain't going to do it.
No. But yeah, an interesting stage, but actually if you just look at the results, you'd be like, that's exactly, you could have told me when the race was presented what the result would be.
Yeah.
Nonetheless.
About Ineos and Thomas, Thomas spoke in his post-race interview that they were at the front for security reasons because it was a technical stage. I think that is utter bullshit.
They were taking time out of the breakaway.
They were at the front, not just solely for that reason. You don't ride the first 100 kilometers. You don't control the breakaway formation and ride the first 100 kilometers. Plus the uphill segments for the reason that the stage is technical. You ride a descent, which is perfectly fine.
Yeah, that's descent, fine. Descent.
The rest, utter bullshit statement.
I mean, I thought yesterday they were here to win. Today, I'm not so sure.
Today they rode...
I don't know...
I can't even place it. There's no, like, it doesn't make sense for anything.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Anyway, I've said my piece on it.
And, like, the outcome of this stage, it's not deadly, eh?
Well, it's just because I don't think Pog looked that good. Like, I don't give up. I never give up. Like, don't turn up and give up. I always believe, like, anything can happen in a Grand Tour. Yes, is Pog going to win?
Yeah, but...
95% chance, yes, but never give up.
For me, it's because of the statements before the race where they said they would ride aggressively for the victory.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Because otherwise we'd be talking in a similar fashion to O'Connor where it'd be like, I'll play defensively, ride for the podium, stuff like that, because Pogacar most likely going to win.
He already came second last year.
Yeah, so who cares?
O'Connor's never podiumed a Grand Tour.
Yeah.
So that's G's in his second last year of his career, right? So, like, and as I said, like, if Poggy has a really bad day, which I think might happen,
It's
not impossible.
But unlikely.
Or like Roglic, he crashes and then,
he crashed today.
Anything can happen.
Could have broken his hand, which we don't want, to be clear.
You want to be 1 minute behind Not 2:30 behind.
Yeah.
Because look at Grenon. G dropped him on Grenon when he had the big wobble. Poggi still finished second. And that was different, of course. But I'm just saying, like, when, if and when he has the wobble, you want to be as close as possible.
Yep. You want to be ahead of the others as well.
G's TT is so good. I'm not worried if the other guys could be 30 seconds ahead of him. Yeah. I wouldn't be worried.
Fair.
I would be as close as possible to Poggi. But
yeah. Martinez, pretty good when it comes to TT, though. Is also in 45 seconds in GC, just like Thomas.
He is... But I don't trust Martinez for 3 weeks. I just don't.
His last consistent Grand Tour was 2021. I hope he does a consistent Grand Tour. I want to see it, but I have fear in me.
Tomorrow, the stage from stage three from Novara to Fossano. It's the first of the sprint stages. Flat first 50 kilometers, then the 4K, 4% climb. Some intermediate sprints on some around some little hills. Nothing proper. Then with 23Ks to go, there's the Tirasco 1200 meters, 6% climb. There's a bonus sprint there. Maybe if the breakaway is caught, we see...
Sorry.
Does Martinez... I think Martinez sprints for that.
I have to interrupt you to tell you that Fortunato is sixth in GC.
That's why I'm saying Poggi's performance is not... He put 27 seconds into Fortunato.
Come on, don't do Fortunato like that. Anyway, continue.
Now, good from Fortunato, don't get me wrong, but... 1200 meters, 6%. I think maybe Martinez sprints for it, then a little plateau, then another kicker up to Salmour, then a descent. That descent is going to be chaotic. It's with about 8Ks to go before, and because you want to be in position for the last pivotal climb. 1800 meters, 4%. You can lose positions there, then it's 3K plateau sprint to the finish.
But I will say the last 3 kilometers, virtually straight, only one sharp bend at 1300 meters to go, not 13, would be a bit technical then. But there's a false flat segment from 4.5 to 3 kilometers to go, like you mentioned. But those final 3 kilometers, the final straight is 1.3 kilometers, no corners, 9 meter wide.
Literally straight.
Yeah.
I think Milan wins by 3 bike lengths.
Yeah, I picked Milan in the podcast.
No, but it resets. I'm allowed to change during a race.
Am I allowed to pick Milan?
Yeah, you're allowed to pick Milan.
Because you picked Milan.
Yeah, but Coy crashed. I would have picked Coy, but he crashed.
Okay, so I'll pick Milan. Like,
his lead out's going to be Sturva and Consoni on that climb. They're going to launch it. They're going to put Merlier and Van Leeuwenberg in bad position with that straight bend. You said if they can keep the pace high, it'll be really hard to come back for Merlier. I think if Milan times it right, he will win easily.
Yeah.
I'm assuming. I mean, the crash from Coy, it looked like it wasn't just like Poggi's crash. It looked a bit worse than Poggi's crash.
Yep.
From Coy. So we'll see. But who knows? Maybe Merlier does better on the hill than I expect. Maybe Caleb Bjorn, who also went for a bony sprint today, can be up there. Who knows? Anything else, Benji?
Not really. I'm looking forward to the next stage. It's been the outcome is as expected today, but shit happens in this stage.
Oh, great first two stages, yeah.
Yeah. I'm very happy with the first two stages of this Grand Tour. I think tomorrow will be a fun sprint as well, a bit different, a slight tweak to it, not a straight, well, it is a straight sprint, but not a straightforward lead up to the sprint, bit of a false flat before, so we'll see whether Merlier is comfortable going over that. He's had good hilly sprints in the past in the Middle Eastern countries, but when it comes to Grand Tours, can he perform that there? We don't know, we'll see. So I'm feeling the vibe.
Otherwise, around the traps, Demi Vollering won the La Vuelta Femenina easily. Ooh. She won the final stage.
And Royster helped her today.
SD Works did a really good job today. They helped and it was all fine. Troy Broglion, Arnaud Delis won in a small group sprint ahead of Venturini and Gothera.
After having a mechanical when the race popped off with 40 kilometers to go and then coming back with the team not being present in the peloton, coming to the front, eventually still winning a race, dominant performance.
Okay, good job from him. And let me look, Ronde Lizard. Final stage, Joseph Pidcock actually won. I'm not sure if it was a reduced group.
Joey did?
Yeah, Joseph.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's from the GC group. He won the reduced group sprint. So that's cool to see Joseph Pidcock winning. And in the GC, Darren Van Beckham won despite from Visma Lease Bike Dev Team, despite, I was about to say Vingegaard, despite Nordhagen abandoning. Vidar was second.
Future Jonas?
Lotto Destiny rider is quite an interesting rider. And Menno Heising third. And in Elsteren Ronde Brugge, Around Benji's house, Alexander Kristoff won a small reduced sprint ahead of Jana van der Paar and Pierre Barbier. Jana van der Paar is a bit of a point scorer, isn't he, Benji?
Yes, he had a bit of an injury, if I recall correctly. Came back, he won that
GP
Montserrat, Chad GPT race back in February,
he's
March.
He's a good rider.
He is he's an upcoming sprinty boy in classics races, so I'm looking forward to seeing what that develops into, because that could be pretty valuable for the likes of maybe Kuurne's Geldeprijs kind of vibe, because now in Kuurne, Tamignol was the kind of option that was left over.
Yeah.
On paper, Dele should have been there. So
or Brugge de Panne.
Yeah.
Yeah,
something
yeah.
like that. So it's also a muscly guy. Is how I describe him. Yeah, it's a big boy.
Big boy.
Yeah. So he's
this
definitely
big, this is a big boy race. Like Pierre Barbier, Sam Dehaes, Christophe van der Paar. It's big boys only. And Vara van Gelova was also in the group. Now that I know how to say his name, I keep saying it to keep mine. Okay. Thanks everybody for listening. Make sure you check out pillarperformance.com. Use code Rouge for 15% off your micronutrition products. Thanks again for sponsoring today's episode, and we'll see you with Recap of Stage 3 tomorrow. Until then, ciao.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.